I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Under the Radar with me, Sean Hughes. Two newies in today. We've Mike Gunn. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
And, right, let me try and get this. Fumbi Atateo.
No, Omoteo.
Oh, that was pretty good. Come on.
You know how to say it.
Yeah, okay. No, I don't. I'm dyslexic. And also,
Are you?
Yeah,
I am as well.
Well, it's going to be cracking when we start writing to each other. Following on from the last pod's fascinating discussion on crockery, just to remind listeners, we were discussing the fact that less food is consumed from red crockery than any other colour. We're delighted to welcome back Dr. Philip Berlanger for more crockery talk. Hello.
Hello. Nice to see you.
Now, I believe today he'll be discussing the fact that plate sales are falling in major department stores in favour of bowls. What's your preference, Mike?
Oh, I'm definitely a plate man.
Big like plate, little plate?
A big plate, you know, no, with as flat as possible, but not a bit of wood or any of that shit.
In the restaurants?
I can't be dealing with that. And also, I don't like a separate bowl. You know, sometimes you get a breakfast and they give you a little separate bowl on the plate with beans in it.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Just put the beans on the plate, do you know what I mean?
Well, you might.
I don't need a fucking separate. It really annoys me. I just immediately tip it on and give them the bowl.
And what about mayonnaise then?
What about mayonnaise?
They put those in little bowls.
Don't have mayonnaise
as well.
With your breakfast.
No, but when you have your chips.
Chips?
Chips, Mike.
Chips and mayonnaise. Are you continental?
Yeah, I am. Halloumi and everything.
Oh, God.
A lot of it.
Yeah, no, I don't mind
Fumbi,
mayonnaise on chips.
You bowler plate?
It depends what you're eating, though, right?
Like, well, salad obviously is bowl, except for Mike, you put it on a plate.
Soup.
Sometimes on bowl.
Soup bowl, obviously.
Yeah. You don't have that on a plate, just get a huge plate and a straw.
But I do agree with Mike about the whole beans and that little bowl thing.
It's annoying.
It's those cool breakfast places, you know, they try to be stylish.
Yeah, but that's because you're both working comics and you're sick to death of hotels in general.
Yeah, of course.
So that's at least your problem.
Yeah.
Mine is not smoking in the room. I make sure that I can open the window and then...
Every time I go to a hotel now, Sean, I think of you about the no smoking sign.
Right.
I think, how would Sean get around this?
But I had a weird one. I was staying in the Holiday Inn, had a fag out the window.
Nice success.
45 minutes later, knock on the door. Someone obviously ratted me out because she went... She went, can I smell smoke? No. Says I had one outside earlier on.
Right. Yeah. Like, that always works.
Someone must have told her. Yeah. Because there's no way she's walking down the corridor going, someone's been smoking a couple of hours ago here in that shithole, the Holiday Inn.
Yeah. You're right about the hotels, though. They're so, when you stay in them a lot, there are things that really start to piss you off, aren't they?
I tell you what really pissed me off. I was up in Cardiff filming. Yeah. And then I just saw somebody smoking. You know, I was going past the room and I went... So I went downstairs and went, have you got smoking rooms? And they went, yes, we have. What have you fucking staying in a non-smoking room for a week where the window wouldn't open?
Disappointment.
But that's unusual to have any hotel allow smoking.
I don't know why they don't have smoking rooms in hotels.
Actually, to be fair, when I did get my smoking room, it stunk.
I see what you mean, yeah.
Vaping, that's where you need to go.
What?
Vaping, you know, what I've been doing.
Vaping.
Oh, I thought you said go rape. You're kind of a bit anxious about not smoking. Just rape someone.
Rape and then smoke afterwards.
I've tried the vaping, but it's not the same. I like the whole lighten up and all that nonsense.
Well, you know, just pretend.
I'm not five.
You can get...
Oh, this is my imaginary cigarette. Ka-ching! Look, you like it.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
So,
see yourself.
Do you, how much did you smoke beforehand?
I didn't smoke beforehand.
You just picked up the vaping habit, Mike.
Yeah.
Mike's a bit of an addict. We'll get onto that in a minute, actually, especially with plates.
Also, the tucking of the sheet and the tucking of the blankets really tightly in under the bed
I don't get
in
that.
The hotels. Who wants that? No one wants that, do they?
I don't understand where they put cushions on the bed.
Oh, that's the whole thing.
So the first thing you do is just throw them on the floor.
Exactly. Like this budget bed with these really cool cushions. You're like, this doesn't look luxurious at all.
No, yeah. I was doing Kilkenny and I was staying in a kind of fancy enough hotel, but they had one of those huge, big, huge rolls just on the bed. And yeah. What am I supposed to do with that?
Chuck it on the floor with a cushion. Yeah.
So what I did was I saw Steve Frost was in the room beside me. He's a great comic. And he was really battered. And he said, oh, I'm just going for a sleep. So I got my big roll and just put it outside his door. So when he opened the door, he just, this thing attacked him. So I said, did you enjoy your little surprise, Steve? He went, yeah, I jumped right back into the room. I was so scared.
Well,
So, but do you like to get home a lot from gigs?
I like to get home because it's, you know, I like to be somewhere where the kettle actually does fit under the tap.
And why don't they give you proper cups as well? Because it just goes, the tea goes cold straight.
They're doing it deliberately to annoy you.
The worst part's the iron. You know the irons with the knot when you pour water in them and you try and iron, the water falls back out.
I've never tried to iron anything.
I can see that. By your
attire. I'm not a presser of trousers or an ironer. I am living the dream.
Oh, mind you have to iron in a hotel.
Leather shorts don't iron well, do they?
I know, but like, I'm going out later on.
And it's hot.
So, for me, do you like to get home or stay in a hotel?
I like to get home. I mean, when I met Mike, we were at the RAF gig. We had the option to stay over. I heard Mike was going back to London. Even though he was driving to Cockfosters, I said, I'm coming with you.
Yeah, but what were they going to put you up in? Like one of the barracks?
In the barracks.
Of course you're going to come home. What, barracks? Living the dream.
No, apparently it was quite reasonable, wasn't it?
It was, because Tom Allen stayed with them and they took him on a tour the next morning.
Oh, I bet he stayed with Buddy, with all the troops, didn't he?
So were you doing gigs just for the troops?
No, for the workers.
It was for the officers, wasn't it?
For the base. Officers. For the people that worked on the base.
Yeah.
They're not soldiers?
Not all of them. Some of them are just people that work on the base, right?
You were working for the catering, Steve.
Not all of them were the catering, Sean. So, the wives, the kids that go to school, who are married to these, you know, army men.
Well, you could have said the family rather than the workers. You just made me...
Yeah.
I
don't know who they were.
Were any of them in uniform?
RAF base. No, but it was just an RAF base. So some of them were, you know, some of them proper RAF. Flew round in planes.
Well, they had moustaches.
They had moustaches and they went, topo, old chap, chucks away and all that. And the rest of them were just the vermin that look after them.
Did you do all your plane stuff?
Plane stuff?
Yeah, you know that. Hey.
Hey, aren't those potatoes small?
Well, let's get started on the food on planes. So no one's going to Edinburgh this year, it seems. No one on the podcast. You're writing a new show, though, Mike.
I am writing a show. Well, I've written it, actually, although I say that, you know. I haven't said any of it yet. I'm saying it for the first time
tonight.
Well,
what's it about?
What's it about? That's a good question. It's about...
Well, I'll get back to you. Fumby, you're writing a new show as well, yeah?
I'm writing a new show.
Have you got a name for it?
You know, I had a name, but someone called it an awful pun. I was going to call it The Fumby Thing Is.
Yeah, that sounds like Joe Lyson type thing.
And that's why I'm reconsidering the name. I liked it because my name's Fumby, and it, you know, the first two letters are fun, so like the funny thing is when the Fumby thing is. But then I thought about it and I thought, oh my god, I've seen those posters all
because
over.
Because of my dyslexia as well, the first time I play with you, I'm going, who's this Cumbaloobie Deedy that I'm playing with? So I think you should just do a good title where you're not, people are going, what's Fumby? What's that about?
Well, you know, I've reconsidered the name, you know, so that was just like a little, you know, when you're bored and you're thinking of names for a show, I just came up with that. But I'll probably call it something more, you know, more groundbreaking.
Let's call it The Groundbreaking Show.
That's good idea.
The Groundbreaking Show. Yeah. That sounds a bit cocky, you know. I don't know if the show's going to be groundbreaking or not.
But it gets the people in, though. And then
and then they can just
say. Then you open up by going, it's not groundbreaking at all. In fact, this is the original title. Wumby Wumby Wumby.
And the original themes, yeah.
Have you got themes sorted out?
Yeah, man. I'm trying to express, you know, like I'm doing a lot of Black Lives Matter march.
Sorry?
Black Lives Matter, you know, the whole
march. Oh, right.
Yeah, I went to one of those.
Because you're always over in America.
Yeah.
It was over here. Okay.
Right.
And we had one over here, man.
What?
No black people were killed over here, though.
Yes, but it's not about black people. It's about humans. And humans are being killed. And
I might
humans.
Go on a march in Dublin for that.
You might as well.
Why isn't it called Humans Matter, then?
because
because racist from me.
No, because humans do matter, right? Yeah. But there's obviously a league table, like a Premier League table, where the lives come in order.
Yeah.
And we're just reminding you, even though we're not top of the order, we still matter.
Okay. Yeah, go back to the original title. That show sounds shit.
It's quite moving, though.
Is it really?
I've got some material on it, so yeah, it's quite.
But it's kind of London centric.
It's London centric. It's not about. Obviously, it relates to stuff that goes on in America because. The difference between, the difference between American police and English police is our police don't have guns. Now, I'm not saying if they did have guns, it would be the same results, but there is still a lot.
Pepper sprays.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of them do have guns these days.
Not like Americans, though. You can't get your standard cop in Hackney walking around with a gun.
Yeah, you can.
No, you can't.
I bet there are.
Try driving home fast.
Yeah.
I don't have to drive home fast, I just have to drive home.
We're always at the airport, and it's full of coppers walking around with guns.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Proper submachine guns.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're scared of terrorism.
And cannons.
It's a bit weird at the airport to have a submachine gun, because surely that's for spraying crowds, isn't it?
But do you ever get that? Because you know what, comedians, do you ever feel like saying something funny about the gun to the officer?
No.
Just me then, okay.
It's just you.
I always just think to myself.
You probably shouldn't say something funny.
But I would just think, should I just ask him what kind of gun is that? You strapped, you know, shit, I hear in rap music.
No.
No, it's like.
They have no sense of humor.
Yeah, no, apparently not. No, yeah.
No, so. I wouldn't do a joke with a copper, even though lots of coppers come to see me.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, me, actually. I have coppers and doormen seem to be my fan base.
That's because you used to do heroin, though. Yeah. Right? Just checking up on
it's
it.
Good to target your audience, man.
But, like, so is it a political show, then, for me?
It's not a political show. It's a show about how I see the world and where I fit in this world and my experiences and how it shaped me to where I am now. You know, I see the world. Ever since I was a kid, I've seen the world as black and white, you know, and I want to talk about that and why I feel the way I feel and the things that, you know, shape my mindset.
But do you really think? I thought like London was pretty good. I think the rest of the country, because I remember once doing a gig in Dundee, and this was years ago, and Arthur Smith was comparing, and Felix was on, it was a brilliant black comic, and Arthur used to give introductions, and Felix, like, I know how he felt, because he was walking around going, I'm the only black person, you know, around here. Mm-hmm. And Arthur's introduction to him was, this next act, Felix Dexter. A very hard act to follow, but a couple of lads managed it last night and gave him a good kicking. So Felix goes that kind of, do they think this is true? But so no, because like with London, you must be fine, especially Hackney.
Well, not really, because even though we say London's fine, we're still highly segregated. We still do our own things, you know.
You mean you have your own ghettos?
Well, you have your own life, because it's nothing for me to not have any white friends and still live in London. And vice versa, you have some people who have never had, you know, will not have any encounters with other people of races. But I know you, Sean. Okay. Do you know what I mean? But what I mean is, even though we think London is cool, it's still very, very separate. We're still very separated in the way we live.
But you ever, because I'll tell you one thing, like, you know, where I don't think a lot of people are racist, but because, like, for instance, I was brought up in Ireland where there was no black people. Mm. So when I came over here first, I was frightened of black people.
Well, why were you frightened of black people?
Because I'd never seen them before, and that's that kind
of
thing.
Okay, that's interesting, but when black people see white people for the first time, we're not frightened, because we're accustomed to
your
culture.
But if you saw
culture,
a gang of white people...
I still wouldn't be frightened, because we're accustomed to the culture of white people, because it's spread all over the world.
Yeah, you're braver than me. Yeah.
But don't get me wrong, if I'm walking through a group of white people who look intimidating...
Yeah, me too.
I would be, you know, okay, my guard might be up, but then I've grown up in tough neighbourhoods, so I'm not easily scared. However, when people say they're afraid of black people, it's not just, you know, the thuggish looking ones, it's all of us in general.
No, it is the thuggish looking ones.
You think so?
Yeah.
What's a thuggish looking black person?
An old kind of Jamaican woman, I'm like going, oh Jesus, she might have a knife. I'm not thinking like that.
But I do think everyone boxes black people as that ghetto image.
Everyone boxes.
I feel like the.
See, no wonder you're all tough, boxing away.
I just feel the image.
Yeah.
Of black people around.
Well,
the
world. Sorry to hear that. You think there's segregation?
No. Well, you know what? It's interesting. My friend said to me the other day, every time he encounters a white person, he feels he has to give him a good impression of himself so that he won't judge every other black person like that. And I just found that very interesting.
See, I live in Crouch End, and there's two black people who live there.
Yeah.
And I always say hello to them.
Doctors.
Yeah. When I'm here, like, I'm very friendly to them.
I like Crouch End, by the way. I went to college near Crouch End.
So what college was that, though?
College of North East London. It wasn't a great one.
Right.
No, it wasn't. We had metal detectors before we get to class.
Wow.
Yeah, so you're not going to make much.
In Crouch End. Next show.
That is my show.
Mike, I've given you plenty of time.
Yeah. My show's called White Lives Matter.
I'm coming to
no, it's
mic.
Not. It's called. It's
I've got
called,
a poster for you and everything.
It's called, it might be called Swimming, Not Waving. It's about the pointlessness of everything and life choices. I'll tell you how it starts. It starts because this...
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
Good evening, policeman.
I'll tell you what gave me... What set me off. I was doing a gig in a big chain of comedy clubs and I was, you know, doing okay, and a woman in the front row who was completely out of her mind on drinking drugs threw up, okay, all over the place. Someone on the stage, someone on my shoes, right? And everybody cheered and applauded.
Right.
And I stood there amongst the cheers and the applause, looking down at the sick on my shoes, and I thought, am I wasting my life?
That point. That,
that's where it starts.
That's a good opener.
That's a good opener, man.
But so, like,
did I say sorry?
Well, no,
she was out of her mind. She was out of her mind.
You don't tend to apologise when you're drunk.
No, no.
She rang him up the next day.
She did email
so
me.
What did I do last night?
Yes.
So, when did you start? So, you went to college then, for yeah. So, then, how did you get into the comedy?
I saw my GCSE results. There's no future in the medical sector for me. So
you're not going to be a doctor in Crouch End.
I couldn't even move to Crouch End, so I had to find.
What did
another
your parents
route.
Want you to do then?
My parents are African, right? So they wanted me to do something.
That was a shock, wasn't it?
Yeah. I know you probably were thinking my parents were from Cornwall,
Crouch End.
But yeah. They wanted me to just do what most African parents want, you know, get a job and be successful. That's what the...
So they didn't have any kind of profession.
I wanted to be an electrical engineer, but the reasons behind that made no sense.
Is that why you did the RAF gig?
No. I used to love changing light bulbs in my house.
That's not really the same.
It's not electrical engineer, is it? That's handyman.
I was like 9-10, man. I made the relation that, look, if I could change light bulbs, surely electrical engineer... It makes sense.
Yeah. I can see why your results in school were. Shit, man.
And that's how, you know, that was what I wanted.
What's your life's ambition? Changing light bulbs.
How do you feel about the new, you know, low wattage light bulbs? That
you're just full of misery, Mike. Nothing you like in modern life.
I don't like much. I don't like fun. That's what I really
you don't
like.
Like fun, Mike.
You do like fun.
Hate
but
fun.
So, right, so you changed the light bulb. And then did someone say how
had
many people does it take to change a light bulb? And you went comedy.
No, I just decided, because I was being funny as a kid. And my sister was like, you should use your talent.
So when did that change?
This is why I love Sean, you know. This is why I came to do the podcast.
I know.
I just decided. I went to drama school initially because I didn't think I could do stand-up.
Did you?
Well, who thinks I can do stand-up comedy? I didn't even know it was an art form.
Well, I did it from a very early age.
Oh, really?
I didn't
think about
stand-up. Well, we're going to get to your story.
I still didn't think. I'm still not sure I can do it.
Well, I play with you recently. I thought you were very good. When I played with Fumby, you were very good. So how did you start then?
I start because...
You were late, weren't you?
I was late, yes.
For the gig.
For everything.
That's why that one was late drinking so much. Where is he?
I've been late for everything because I've spent a lot of my youth taking drugs. So... I'm behind, well behind everybody
else.
But
that's an amazing story. Like, we shared a car journey home as well. You tend to give people lifts, thanks for that.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
But that's the thing, like...
I don't like to be alone.
Changing.
It's funny, I've heard Mike's story through Imran. He told me your whole story. It was incredible.
Did
he? Yeah, in Edinburgh.
Imran's, you know, he's got everything, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got it down.
Yeah.
He'll come up to you and go, yeah, what about that joke you used to do? And you tell you a joke and you go, what? I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I've never done that joke. Yeah. You did it in Battersea in 1981. You were third on the bill. You go, what the fuck are you talking about?
I get that. I get people tweeting me going, oh, that's Sean Hughes joke. And I'm going, I don't know if that's mine.
Yeah, no, Imran's a bit like that.
Yeah, he's a big fan of you. He told me your whole story.
Oh, did he?
loves me as well.
Probably Ian.
I met you.
He loves me and he loves sharks.
Sharks?
Yeah, he's obsessed by sharks.
Who? What, Imran?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Really?
Well, obviously he's closer to me than
he is to you guys. He's like a 7-year-old boy.
He didn't trust you with his shark obsession.
No.
But, So what were we talking about?
Yeah. His story.
Yeah.
If I jumped in, sorry, Mike.
Yeah. Come on. You had plenty of time.
Plenty of time.
Talking about
his show and his light bulbs. Yeah. His light bulb
Hackney
moment.
And you know how white people intimidate you. And the marches to save black lives that are kind of not in any serious problem.
To save black people in Crouch End from oppression.
Yeah. But so you, where were you brought up then, Mike?
I was brought up in, Aldershot, around there, Surrey.
I can understand the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Aldershot, Farnborough, Camberley, all around there. It's not nice, it's rough.
No, there's some nice people, but then there's a garrison town, and they're never nice.
No.
Well, the gig I did was literally across the street from the station.
What?
The train station?
Yeah, there's a pub around the corner, and it's just a nice little gig.
So you could get home straight away?
Straight away,
saying,
I loved it. As soon as I came off, I walked straight to this. I even checked my time before I left the stage. I loved that stuff.
Before you left the stage.
Yeah, I think I've the 9:22. So no encore for me, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And did you get all your posters and stuff, your Black People Matter?
This was last year, Sean.
It's been going on for a while. You're very late to this party.
No, the movement.
Black people didn't matter last year.
No.
We did, but we didn't think we had to march. We thought it would get sorted.
So where
then.
Did you march? To Downing Street?
Oxford Circus, man. It was a lot, you know. Like, we marched from the US Embassy up Marble Arch to Hyde Park, all the way up Park Lane. We get to Hyde Park Corner, everyone's like, let's march to Parliament. And I was like, I'm going to take the bus
to meet
you guys there. Yeah, because I couldn't walk anymore. It was too much.
You're a young man.
I know, but
did you stop off and do some shopping on Oxford Street?
I was trying to return some shit.
Get some trainers.
Yeah.
You marched, but you went on the bus.
Well, towards the end.
How much do Black Lives Matter to you exactly?
Yeah, I was just like, on the bus, but you're still chanting,
banging the window and stuff. Yeah. It was a good fun day. Yeah. It was nice.
Just okay. Tiring, by all means.
Tiring. Yeah. I don't know how.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not a regular. I hope it stops soon because I can't be watching.
Good job you're not leading the cause, isn't it?
We take regular breaks.
Black Lives Matter. Oh, but it's hard.
The whole time, I just kept
thinking
material.
We're going to have a riot, but we're going to have a riot on a bus. But so, Aldershot, and then just, did you have a job and stuff?
No.
So straight into the drugs?
I had a few little jobs, sort of delivery driver and stuff like that. And then I just got massively into taking heroin. And I did that for the next, 10, 12 years or something.
That's a long time.
It's a long time.
Was this all before comedy as well?
Oh, God, yeah. I didn't do anything.
Can you imagine being on stage on heroin?
He was just stocking up on material. That's what Mike was doing.
I wasn't.
He just knew, I'm going to need a wealth of material for my career.
I just did a
stock up on
huge
it.
Amount of drugs.
Can you imagine doing a gig on heroin? You'd just be going,
yeah.
Oh, you wouldn't. You're an amazing crowd.
You wouldn't, actually.
Crowd ever.
You'd be late and you wouldn't care.
But it's a major turnaround. So then you went to rehab and stuff like that, did you?
I did all that sort of proper rehab. Back in the days when rehab wasn't the sort of socially acceptable celebrity cure-all, right or wrongs.
So no PR team came waiting for you.
Exactly, yeah. It really annoys me when somebody celebrity does, like, what's his name? The anti-Semitic...
Butch Cassidy.
Yeah, Butch Cassidy. No, what's his name?
Sundance Kid?
No. Oh, anyway, you all know.
Ken Livingston?
No, he said something horrendously, a racist, and then he went,
Mel Gibson,
that's it. I need to go into rehab. He goes into rehab, and then we go, all right, that's fine now. I was horrifically addicted to all sorts of stuff. It didn't make me say anything horrendously anti-Semitic.
Are you sure?
I'm not entirely sure. I just think it's
I've
a bit of a...
I've got tapes 12 years ago
of my entire
binge. Did you
binge.
Say this, Mike?
Well, you know, I was shot. Get the Indians out of there, right?
I always think it's a bit weird. But anyway,
I
did that. You know, and then he comes out and goes, oh, yeah, sorry, I needed a bit of treatment. Which is bollocks, that.
It actually happened today. I won't name the person, but there was a TV football pundit who was done three times over the limit drink driving.
Yeah.
And rather than go to court, he went to rehab.
Exactly, and they go for the weekend.
To get out of maybe getting a prison sentence.
Really?
Yeah, of course it was. That's why I went to bloody rehab. But anyway, that's why everyone goes to rehab. Of course it is.
Or was it part of the kind of condition? You go to prison unless you go to rehab.
Yeah, it was like, you know, you can either go to prison or you can go to rehab.
Yeah. And how long were you in rehab for?
And, you know, 9 weeks, residential.
Did you have a big old proper party the night before?
Oh, God, yeah. Of course I did.
Like a send-off.
And so
I was so fucked when I turned up. You wouldn't believe it.
Well, I think most people are.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they know it's your last chance.
Yeah, it's your last chance. You have to use absolutely everything.
My mate went to rehab and, you know, he was just getting pissed on the train going
People, they normally poured into rehab. You know, somebody sort of drags them in and they drop to the floor and they go, OK, there he is. See you in 9 weeks.
Is it like a 9 week program or is it just as long as you
want to stay? Some are long, but the one I did was, I think, was 9 weeks and I did do the whole thing. Yeah.
And then you came out clean and.
I came out and, scored on the way home.
Well, you're always a great footballer.
Wow.
No, you didn't score on the way home.
I did, yeah, yeah.
Really?
I did, absolutely.
So what got you off it in the end, then?
I think actually rehab was very successful for me. It doesn't sound like it was.
No, it doesn't sound
But it was. It made me, you know, realise lots and lots of stuff. It was that I'm very supportive of certain types of rehab. There's lots of mental rehabs out there. But the sort of, you know, 12-step type Hazelden model
program. Well, my brother was telling me that...
It's a good system.
He kind of... he's read a book where there's a new form of rehab where you don't stay there, you just go there at night time, because that's when you're having your main problem, is wanting drinking drugs and stuff.
No.
it's not a real thing.
There's levels, Sean.
There's levels.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I woke up and used immediately.
Wow.
There was no bloody
And we'll be getting
time.
The money, surely a delivery van driver doesn't pay that much.
Crime.
For God's sake.
It's a good job he wasn't doing comedy, because sometimes we get paid cash in hand. That would just be going straight.
You claim it, don't you, Fumby?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I said sometimes, not all the time. Most of the time, it is backs.
Well, I hope the police aren't listening to this particular show.
Tax
fraud, crime, drugs,
drug dealing.
Fumby hates the police.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a good podcast.
But and so, how did you get into the comedy then?
I got into the comedy because after I did Funny Clean Up and did all that, I was horrendously shy and sort of insecure. Well, if you've used, you know, if you've been on heroin for most of your life and you've never done anything not on drugs,
right?
You know, I'd never been on a date not on drugs. I'd never, you know, slept with a woman I'd never done anything not on drugs. And all of a sudden, you're kind of naked and you're horribly insecure and, you know. And sort of exposed.
Fumby's never been out with a woman either.
No, I know.
Nothing to do with the drugs.
Were you a different person? Like, and you said you were more confident, Mike, on drugs.
Oh, God, I was off drugs. I was a horrendous mess. And on drugs, I was a horrendous mess, but a different sort of a mess. But so it's very hard to get a kind of job. If they, you know, you go to your, if you go to the interview and they go, right, let's have a look at your CV. Criminal record.
Here's my dealers.
Long criminal record. You've never done a job. You've been addicted to heroin for many years. Yes, welcome to the bank. You know.
I think you've skipped over the delivery part.
Exactly.
It's quite good at that. Thank you very much.
And I repaired photocopiers for a while as well. But
I changed a light bulb once.
So I ended up looking around for something that I could fit into. And look at the world of comedy. It's the only job where you can, you know, you can say, yeah, I've taken drugs and acid and all sorts of stuff. And I've done therapy and been in rehab, and everyone just goes, yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's your opener.
Just joking.
There's very few jobs that's kind of very acceptable in.
But no, but you've been doing it for quite a while now, though, haven't you?
Yeah, but I started doing it as an exercise in... I was looking around for something to do with my life, but I did a stand-up comedy course as a kind of exercise in confidence building. I wasn't really planning on doing
stand-up.
Did
you do the Amuse Moose one?
Oh, God, no. This is well before that went mad.
Was it Logan Murray's one?
No, it was at the... it was in Archway at the...
The Whittington Hospital.
Yeah. It was. There was a different. We had a different teacher at the Jackson's Lane Community Centre. Yeah. We had a different teacher every week. Andy Parsons was one of them. Wow. Dave Thompson was one teacher. Charmaine Hughes was a teacher. Nick Wilty was a teacher. He was voted the best.
Was he?
Yeah. By the whole course, because he came in with four cans of special brew, right? Uh-huh. Sat down on the floor, opened the first can, and went, right, what do you want to know? And what we wanted to know was phone numbers of people we could ring to get gigs, yeah, and what time and what day. And he just gave us all that information. He drunk his beers. That
but
was,
that's when,
and
when
that
I
was it.
Off,
we left.
Time Out used to have all the numbers,
yeah,
for the clubs, and you just ring them up, and they go, yeah, we'll give you 10 minutes and six,
yeah,
months.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Was it the same for you, Fumby, when you were starting?
I won competitions.
For light bulb.
I kind of skipped all of the calling promoters and whatnot.
Did you?
Yeah, I got lucky. I just won a lot of competitions.
Well, definitely show.
I won a competition. Didn't help me.
What was it, for jigsaws or something?
No, it was the Cosmic Comedy Club. I don't know, comedian of the whatever. Do you remember that?
Of the week.
Of the night.
Comedian of the night.
Well, this...
And Adam Bloom was second.
And whatever still, happened to him?
Oh, he still keeps on about it.
Does he?
He's still on about it now when I see him. He's going, well, the only reason that you won that... He does.
Doesn't
swear to you.
Matter now, Adam.
I swear to you, he does bring it.
Well, listen, guys, it's been a pleasure, but we've ignored Dr. Philip Belanger. So are our eating habits changing, Doctor?
Well, yes, they are. I mean, that's partly because of Asian influences. People
listen,
are
thanks very much for coming in. Really appreciate it. You've been listening to me, Sean Hughes, Under the Radar with Mike Gunn and Fumby. Go and see these guys live.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.